Check out my new book, Coping Courageously, a heart-centered guide for navigating a loved one's illness without losing yourself. It's appropriate for you as a clinician, for your patients, and for anyone you know who has a seriously ill loved one or an aging parent. Check it out and tell a friend. Welcome to the Integrative Palliative Podcast, where we help physicians and other clinicians master the art of integrative symptom management so they can wholeheartedly care for themselves as they expertly care for their patients. Welcome to the podcast. I am Dr. Delia Caramonti, and today we're going to talk about negotiating between doctor and patient, or nurse practitioner and patient, nurse and patient, but healthcare provider and patient. And this came up for me because I was just having a conversation with somebody about negotiating with their doctor from a patient's perspective. And it made me think about the fact that as physicians and clinicians, we also negotiate with patients. And so there is a lot of negotiating back and forth in the healthcare system. And I think both patients and physicians and clinicians need skills to negotiate with the other person so that the other person doesn't get their hackles up and we're more likely to have a successful negotiation. Patients often report that they feel frustrated when they're trying to negotiate with their doctor, that we get our hackles up and, you know, we don't want to be flexible and we say, don't go to Dr. Google, I went to medical school. And I get that, for sure I get that. But we also have frustrations in the other direction, I think, when we are trying to tell a patient, look, you need to take your blood pressure medicine, or you have to finish this antibiotic course, you need to do physical therapy after that surgery, or you're going to lose your mobility. And often people choose not to do that. And then sometimes the physician gets irritated and it can be sort of a thing. So today I just want to talk about a strategy for negotiating with patients when we are sharing with them our medical expertise, what we think would be helpful in a way that is respectful of them and also respectful of us. But the truth is, this plan, 8 steps, really is useful for any kind of negotiation in the healthcare system or anywhere else. So here's what I think should be our 8 steps. And don't get overwhelmed that there's 8 steps. I don't have time. Visits are too quick. This is just something that when you think about it, you're probably already doing some of it. And when you get in the habit of it, it will be automatic. But I want us to think about it in 8 steps so that we make sure we don't miss any. So the first one that I think sometimes we might miss is that we should start a negotiation with calming our own energy. That's number one, calming our own energy. Because if we are irritated or rushed or distracted, and the patient feels like we're not really totally with them in the room, we will be much less effective at getting our point across. So the very first thing to do in an interaction with somebody where you're hoping to change their behavior is to check in with your own energy and calm your own energy first. That looks different for different people, but that might look like while you're washing your hands, you're focusing on the feeling of the hand sanitizer or the water and soap. You might take 2 or 3 deep breaths where the exhale is longer than the inhale. You might say a small prayer if that's part of your worldview. You might take a moment to notice a few things that you see, a few things that you hear, a few things that you feel. So the idea is calm your sympathetic nervous system. Bring your attention right here in the room. So not at the meeting you just left and not at the charts you're going to have to do later, but right here in the room with this person, and bring your calm and present energy into this conversation. So that's number one. Don't skip that one. I think we often skip that one. So we're rushing around like crazy. We pop into a room and we say, okay, look, your labs are completely out of whack. We have to change all your medicine. This is what you need to do. But that can generate defensiveness in the other person, and we're much less likely to have a successful conversation. So number one, don't skip this one, is to calm your own energy and bring your energy into the room. So number two, rather than starting out with this is what you should do, just introduce the topic. So your blood pressure is still very high, and I have some concerns about that. So I would like us to chat about changing your blood pressure medicines. Would that be okay? So introduce the topic and ask permission. We need to talk about your treatment for your cancer. I want to chat about different options. Would that be okay? That's 2. Number 3, find out if you can about their goals and values. So what's important to them and what are they hoping to get out of this interaction? So if you're talking about their blood pressure medicine, we have to change your blood pressure medicine. You can ask them, What are you hoping will happen and what's important to you as we talk about this idea of changing your medicines? Because you don't know what they'll say. They might say something like, I don't want to take medicine 3 times a day because it's going to make me feel like a sick person. Or I'm having trouble affording my medications. Or I didn't tell you, but I'm having erectile dysfunction from that last medicine you gave me. So there's no way I'm going to take more medicine now. So ask them, what are they looking for from this experience of changing their medicines and what is important to them? That's 3. Number 4, make your suggestions. And if you can, tie your suggestions to their goals and values. So if you're asking them, what's the most important thing for you here? We need to start chemo, for example. What are you thinking about? What's important to you here? What are you hoping will happen here? So they may say, of course, well, I'm hoping you're going to cure my cancer. Okay, great. What else? Well, my daughter is getting married in 2 months and I want to be able to be at the wedding and I'm concerned about what chemo is going to make me look like and feel like. So that's a really important thing for you to know about, right? Maybe you can negotiate with them about, okay, let's start on this day so that on the wedding day, you'll be feeling the best that you can. You'll be at the end of your 3-week cycle, for example, you'll be feeling the best that you can. So because of that, let's start your chemo a week later than we were planning to so that we can make it so that you'll feel as good as possible on the wedding day. And if you didn't ask about that, you wouldn't know. You wouldn't be able to make that modification for the patient that could make a huge difference for them. So try, if you can, to match your plan to their goals and values, if you can. So your goal is to not have to take medicines 3 times a day. I get it, because you don't want to feel like a sick person and you're having some issues around affording the medicine. Well, there is actually a medicine that you could take once a day that is not that expensive. Does that sound like the right approach for us to go? So if you do that, if you hear what's important to them first and then you tie your suggestions to that, they feel so respected and are much more likely to actually do what you suggest, which of course is our goal, because if we come up with a treatment plan for somebody, we would like them to complete that treatment plan. See if you can, instead of just going gangbusters in with this is what you should do, introduce the topic first, find out what their goals and values are, and then when you make your suggestions, see if you can tie it to their goals and values. And then 5 is to ask them about their resistance or any barriers that they see. So, okay, it sounds like we're going to start this medicine. It would be once a day. I suggest that you take it in the morning. Does that sound like that would work for you? Any concerns there? Anything you worry about? It gives them the opportunity to say, well, I take all my other medicines at night. I'd rather take it at night. Would that be okay? Whereas they might not ask you that otherwise. So seeking out resistance and barriers that you can address right up front make you much more likely to have a successful outcome with this patient because they're more likely to do what you suggest. So if we're suggesting pain medications for somebody with cancer pain, for example, and we just say, okay, you're having cancer pain, we're going to prescribe morphine and you're going to take it 3 times a day and that will make your pain better. Sometimes people will speak up, but sometimes they won't speak up. So if we ask them, so are there any feelings of resistance that you're having to this plan or any barriers that you see that might show up? They might say, hey, there's someone in my house who has an addiction to opiates or used to have an addiction to opiates, or I'm worried that I'm going to get addicted to opiates, or I have a gun and I'm not going to give it up and I'm not allowed to have the gun if I'm taking opiates. So seeking out resistance saves you from the next time they come finding out that they didn't do anything that you suggested because they had a barrier, but you didn't ask about it, so they didn't tell you about it, and that stopped them from being able to complete the plan. So once you find, are there any resistance or barriers? 6 is to discuss solutions. Validate them. Don't invalidate them. Don't say, well, that's silly. Don't worry about that. Validate them. Okay, I hear you. That sounds important to you. It sounds like you are open to taking the medicine to treat your pain, but you're concerned about it being available to other people in your house. So what do you think about a lockbox so that you can lock up the medication and it's not accessible to anybody else? Does that sound like that might solve your problem? And so work with the person to discuss a solution. Then 7 is agree on a plan. Okay, you're going to go today and get a lockbox, and then we're going to prescribe the medicine and you're going to always put it in the lockbox and just take out one pill at a time. That's the plan. And then 8 is to invite them to check in later without judgment. So this is really important to tell them, hey, this is the plan for now. We're going to try this. But if it doesn't work, please tell me. So if you don't do it, don't be afraid to come back. I'm not going to judge you. I'm not going to be mad at you. I want this to work out for you. I want us to solve your problem. So come back and let me know, and we'll figure out another solution. If you don't say that, and then people don't do what you recommended, they may be worried that you'll be angry, and then they may just not tell you, or they may just not come back. So it's really important when you make a plan with somebody to let them know that you will not judge them if they don't complete the plan just as it's been discussed today. So while this might seem like a lot, and who has time for this, honestly, once you get in the habit of communicating with patients in this way, it's quick. So number one, calm your own energy first, because any negotiation that you have will work so much better if your energy is in a good place first. Second, you introduce the topic. We're going to talk about changing your blood pressure medicines today. Number three, find out what their goals and values are around the topic. So what's important to them and what are they hoping will happen? Number four, make your suggestions. And if you can, match that suggestion to either some value or goal that they mentioned. Number five, ask them about resistance or barriers. What would make this hard? Are you feeling any resistance to this idea? Anything seems like it would get in our way. Number six, discuss solutions. So discuss a solution with them. Ask their opinion. What do you think would work? What do you think would be a plan? Number seven, you agree on a plan and say it back. Okay, so this was what you were hoping to get done. This was your concern. Here was the plan we made. Does that still sound okay? Okay, we agreed on a plan. Ideally, you might write it down. And then eight is invite them to come back and let you know how it went and assure them you will not judge them. So we're going to try this plan. If it doesn't work out or you don't like it or something feels sticky, don't worry about it. Just come back and let me know. I will not judge you or be upset. I'll just work with you to figure out a better plan that works for you. Does that sound okay? So this approach is not only better for patients, obviously, but honestly, it's really better for clinicians too, because we feel better when our patients feel better. We feel better when our doctor-patient or clinician-patient relationship is strong. When we suggest something and then the person doesn't do it, we feel badly. So we will like our job more. If we have interactions like this that are engaging with the patient, respectful of the patient, and make it clear to the patient that we won't judge them. So it's better for us in addition to being better for them. And the truth is, this kind of approach to negotiating works not just with your patients, but with your own doctors, with your spouse, with people at work. This concept of calming your own energy first, finding out the other person's goals and what they're hoping will happen from your negotiation, trying to tie the plan to their goals as well as your own, checking out resistance and barriers, agreeing on a plan, and then checking back in without judgment, that whole idea works throughout your life. So keep it in mind, and then let me know how it works. Reach out to me through the website, email me, let me know if it works or doesn't work. If you have other ideas around negotiation, I would love to hear from you. Please do subscribe to this podcast. It helps me spread the word. Please tell somebody else about it, because that also helps me spread the word, and I would really appreciate it. If you haven't read Coping Courageously, my new book, I would love for you to take a look. It is for both family members of people with serious illness, but also clinicians who care for people with serious illness. There are plenty of tips in there for counseling families, ways to make your own practice work more smoothly and improve your connections with your patients. So I highly recommend that you check it out. I am so grateful that you're here. Thank you so much for being here, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye. This podcast is brought to you by the Integrative Palliative Institute. Visit our website, integrativepalliative.com. There you can access physician and clinician training, well-being coaching, free downloads, and other cool stuff. And feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn and share your favorite episode with a friend.